Test one, test two, test three. Welcome to episode number four of the 25 Feet High Podcast. I'm your host, Kate White, and we got Zach Gibbs. He is going to be joining here and joining us here in just a second. We are excited to talk today, and today we're covering our it's our equipment gear up list. What we use, a little bit of why we use it, and things like that. Going from our bows, our rifles, if we do rifle hunting or handgun hunting, or and then talking about our tree stands, camera gear, stuff like that. But before we get started with that, we're gonna thank all of our supporters of the our podcast, you guys as well. We really appreciate y'all taking your time of your day and listening to us. We truly, truly appreciate it. So first off is Alabama Archery Academy. Alabama Archery Academy is your Southern Alabama Hoyt and Matthews dealer. Also providing archery lessons from beginner to the national championship level. Check them out on Facebook at Alabama Archery Academy. Black Eagle Arrows. Black Eagle Arrows provides superior arrow technology from the tournament trail to the hunting woods. Black Eagle Arrows has you. And we're going to talk more about our arrow setup here in just a second. Threads Custom Bowstrings. Threads Custom Bowstrings is your family owned and operated, providing the fastest turnaround time in the industry on your pre-stretched bowstrings. If you are in the market for a new set of strings, give Threads a call. Tell them 25 High sent you. Last but not least is Native Sense. Native Sense is a truly Alabama owned and farmed deer urine scent company. They're 100% natural, collected for hunters. Native Sense, we get results. All right, guys, so we're about to roll into this one, and we are we're pretty excited to talk about this stuff. But welcome to the 25 Feet High Podcast.
Good, man. I'm so grateful for the Lord allowing me to harvest this beautiful body.
I got a freaking giant bass.
25 feet high, baby. This is awesome. How's it going, Zach?
What's up?
Doing good today?
I'm doing all right. I wanted to do a squirrel hunting podcast today, but we're going to save that for a later date.
Yeah, probably closer to squirrel season.
It's coming up, dude. It's September 14th in Alabama and October 12th, I think, in Alabama.
So September the 14th.
Literally like 13 days or 15 days from
okay,
right now.
Well, we'll try to squeeze that one in like the week after the opening.
I might have to do a quote-unquote scouting trip where I go shoot some squirrels. Might make a video out of it.
Yeah, that would be. That sounds something like really good for 25 high. Let's strap a GoPro to your whatever you use to squirrel hunt. I don't do much.
I use my 17, but I'll strap it in my head.
Yeah, that'll work out good.
I actually do want to make a squirrel hunting video this year. Yeah. Anyway, we should probably get into what we're really doing the podcast on.
Yeah, we like to run off on tangents from time to time, but
every now and then,
I think they're useful tangents.
Sometimes, at least. Maybe. Hopefully.
All right, Zach. So, let's start off by talking about, just our overall, our bow setup. What equipment we're using. Obviously, we're, without talking into it dev too much, we are running Threads Custom Bowstrings.
Obviously.
Yeah, which are freaking awesome strings. I know we talk about them all the time, but you just got to get you a set.
Honestly, like, from my point of view, I'm not like a... I don't really know that much about bows as far as, like, the technical side. But Kate is, like, a master pretty much at, like, tuning a bow. I mean, he can be for other people, but not very much for me.
I wouldn't necessarily call me a master.
But he's really good, and he's been doing it forever, so he knows what he's doing. And he tells me that threads are the best strings he's used, so therefore I listen.
I think they're also. I put 20,000 shots on one of their set of strings before. And that was like in a time period of about 4 months. It was when I was getting ready to go shoot in Vegas.
Yeah.
And they, the only reason I had changed them is because I knew how many shots was on them and I wanted to change them.
Yeah.
Not because I had to.
I mean, I usually get, you know, a new set of strings every year, whether I get a new bow or not. And I don't know, I just, they always work good for me and they look pretty sweet too. You can get all sorts of custom colors.
But yeah, I, like my strings are solid fluorescent yellow. Zach's is, they're green and black speckle, which look pretty cool.
They match. I'm running a QU Verde 2.0 bow. That's like the finish color, whatever, on my bow, and it matches the bow really well. It doesn't stand out too much. Although last year I ran, didn't I have fluorescent green with black? Something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
That matched pretty, it didn't match, but it looked really good.
Yeah. But going from our strings, tell us about your bow setup. What are you running? I mean, obviously I know, but what are you running?
So I have the Hoyt Helix. Obviously, like I just said, NQU. It's just the regular Helix, the 30.5-inch axle to axle. I'm pretty sure it's a number 2 cam. And I'm currently shooting Black Eagle, the deep impacts with them, and they're out of it. And it's pushing those. I think I measured them out. Weren't they like 430, 450, something like that, grain arrows?
I think 435-ish.
Yeah, I think they were worth 435, and he's pushing that arrow at 297,
which is
27.5-inch draw length at 70 pounds.
That's insane! Like that's awesome. That just
I expected to be shooting just under 290.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking he was going to be in that 285-ish realm, but they just, I mean, we're not sponsored by this Hoyt directly through the show and stuff. It's just what Alabama Archery Academy carry, which is Hoyt and Matthews. But
and I really like that Helix. Like I've shot quite a few of the new Matthews bows, and I shot the RX3 and Nitrix, all that stuff. And the Helix just fits me the best, and I just like the way it shoots.
Helix is a pretty sweet bow, but that in a. And quite honestly, that speaks a lot of volume for the arrows too. You know, being able to have an arrow that, even though it's, you know, what you would think, and guys, and you may not know this, depends on how much you study bows, but 400, like an arrow that weighs 430 grains, and in a different brand of arrow that weighs 430 grains. Should, in theory, shoot the same speeds. But it doesn't always work out that way. I've learned that from personal experience. I've shot two different brands of arrows that weighed the exact same and had two different speed results from it.
I'd imagine that's just a spine, isn't it?
Yeah, but they were comparable spines. They were both, at that time with that arrow, with those arrows, they were a 400 spine and a 400 spine. And they had the same exact grains per inch and ended up weighing the exact same. I guess it's something to do with the carbon makeup of the arrow and how they make it up.
But I wonder, like, if, like, I don't know exactly, like, obviously I don't know near as much about bows as most people, but I wonder if it has something to do with how the arrow spine reacts to the bow. I wonder if that has anything to do with it. That's just coming out of somewhere in my brain.
Yeah, I mean, the carbon makeup on how they wrap the carbon and stuff like that has quite a bit to do with it, I would expect. You know, I work on a lot of bows, and I know a fair amount, but I've never really broke down arrows in that type of way. I actually, hopefully, one day we'll be able to get one of the guys from Black Eagle on the podcast. That's not for certain, but that's our hopes, is one day we'll be able to get one of them on. To kind of talk about the arrows more in depth and stuff like that.
But anyway, moving on from like arrows and all that, I am running an Arizona Archery Equipment. Isn't that the name?
Arizona Archery Enterprises. AAE.
That's what I said. I'm running one of their rests. It's the Prophecy. It's a really nice drop away. It's very similar to the QAD, but I don't know. I like it pretty good. And I'm running a 12-inch AAE, Nitrous bar, and a 12-inch, no weight on the front. It's just the bar and the damper, and then I'm running a 10-inch back bar with 4 ounces, I think, off the back. I'm pretty sure it's either 3 or 4 ounces. And I just do that because I like the balance of the back bar. It really makes a bow. It counteracts the weight of like my sight and I'm running like a Zebro's light on my sight, and it really counteracts that and makes the bow super level. I really like the back bar thing.
Well, one thing that can happen, and like Zach's instance or anybody that's shooting a shorter axle-to-axle bow, if you use a little bit longer stabilizer, it can help lower that center of gravity and help you hold that shorter bow better. It can help it stable, you know, what a stabilizer is meant to do. It can help you stabilize the bow a little bit better.
Exactly. And another thing, like for me personally, which I know it's different for everybody, but I noticed when I was shooting, I used to run just a front bar or not very much weight off the back or anything, and I would just sort of get level on my dot or whatever and just sort of droop low. And when I put more weight on the back and have a fairly high ratio of weight in the back compared to the front, it really kind of forces me to raise higher. It doesn't sound like it would because it's more weight on the bottom of the bow, but if you have more weight on the back, it really helps you kind of raise up into the shot, kind of. I think I explained that right.
Yeah, that sounds about right. It helps you hold the bow up.
Yeah.
Without you, that's kind of the point of it a little bit. But tell me about your sight setup.
I'm running, it's a few year old model, but it's the CBE Tech Hybrid Pro. And it's 5 pins with a slider and all that. I don't really use the slider at all. I've really only got 3 pins sighted in. That's 20, 30, and 40. But I do practice, and I need to practice more. I practice at longer distances, so those extra pins kind of help out with just practice. And the reason I practice at longer distances, like 50 and 60 every now and then, is just so if you get good at shooting 50 and 60 and you have your form and all that, your release, your, what does your dad call it? Process.
Yeah, your shot process.
Your shot process really down pat. When you practice at 50 and 60, like I personally am not going to take a shot at a deer past like 35 or 40. But, and that's just me personally, and that's has a lot to do with the terrain I hunt. But, when you practice at those longer distances and you really get your form down and your process down and everything, those 20 and 30 yard shots are like nothing. They're like a 5 yard shot.
Yeah. And I'm a big fan of, I think Michael Waddell was actually the first person I ever heard talk about this. I've heard it from multiple sources, but I think it was Michael Waddell. That one thing I try to do with practicing is I try to practice at twice the distance I plan to be lethal. So if I'm going to shoot at a deer out to 40 yards, I want to spend adequate enough time practicing out to 80, just because it helps. If you could shoot a softball size group at 80, then shooting a deer at 40 ought to be really easy. Now, I mean, coming into play of what the deer does is,
yeah, there's a lot more factors in it when there's a deer.
Yeah, but you got to be confident in your own shot before you worry about what the deer is going to actually do. You got to know your equipment. You got to know what you're doing.
The last thing, yeah, that's a good point, but like practicing farther really helps you dial in what you're doing up close. And 40 yards isn't really that close, but still, when you shoot at 80, it feels a lot closer.
Yeah, I mean, my comfortable, like, I like getting deer close, but, like, my comfort zone for shooting a deer is in between 30 and 40 yards. Just, I feel like that's a perfect distance between me being me being confident in my shot and me being able to get away with more movement. Obviously, getting them in at 30 to that 5 to 10 yard range is really fun. I mean, it's really challenging, but, you know, my comfort zone's 30 to 40 yards. I feel better about me being able to move and me to be able to do all the right things to be able to make that shot better.
Yeah, especially when you're shooting, like, a really fast bow. You know, those 30 and 40-yard shots, that deer's not going to drop near as much when you have a – when you're shooting well over 300 feet per second.
Yeah, and I've had bows that – ended up being around 315 to 320 that you, like, I mean, there's some of those bows, I didn't even have 30-yard pins. I went 20, 40.
Yeah.
Because I was able to not have any gaps.
Yeah, the last thing I'm running on my bow is, I guess it'd be the last, is a tight spot quiver. It's the tight spot rise, I believe. Isn't that right?
I think so.
Yeah, and that's, it's, the tight spot is really well known, like the brand, is really well known in the Western hunting community, I feel like. Like, they, most of their products really are made for the spot and stalk type guy who needs a super light quiver to hike very far in the backcountry and all that and hold arrows and not be super cumbersome. But the Rise is, I think it's a newer product, if I remember correctly, and it's made more for a tree stand hunter. Yeah. Or like a whitetail hunter.
Yeah. And, you know, quivers are really, talking about quivers are one of those things that's not as relevant in setting up a bow for this area.
Not really, because, I mean, most 90, hunters. I would say, I don't know, probably 80, 90% of hunters, when they get up their tree and their tree stand and their box blind and their climber, lock-on saddle, whatever, when they get up there, they take the quiver off. And, like, last year I was putting it in my backpack and hanging it off the side of my climber. And I've hung it up in tree limbs. I've hung it on a hook, all that stuff.
Yeah, the first thing I do whenever I get into the tree is take my quiver off, load an arrow into my bow, and strap my quiver to the side of my climber.
Yeah.
And keep it out of the way.
It does keep it out of the way, and you don't have to. I feel like unless you really set your bow up to have a quiver on it, like the majority of my practice, I've shot 20 shots with that quiver on, and I've shot probably already at least a couple hundred shots without the quiver on. And my bow's really sighted in and set up for not having a quiver. So, I mean.
Yeah, what you decide to do with your quiver, you need to always shoot with it off or always shoot with it on, because that does make quite a bit of difference, especially in longer. You can get away with it with shorter shots, but at longer shots, it starts to really affect your level of your bow and how your bow's level, you know, on the plane. And if your bow is half bubble off, that could be, you know, 4 to 6 inches.
Yeah, like 40 or 50 yards.
So it's very important to always shoot with your quiver off or always shoot with it on. Don't do both.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty much it for my bow. What about yours, Cade?
Well, if you guys follow us at all on our YouTube channel, you pretty much know what I'm running on my bow. I did a bow build video on it. It's actually, I think, number 2 on views on our channel. It's about a 30-minute long video, 30-ish. But So check that video out and you watch me actually build this bow. But I'm running the Hoyt RX3 Ultra. It is, I shoot a 30-inch draw length. So it's the number 2 cam on it.
I thought it was number 3. Is it number 2?
I'm pretty sure it's number 2. I might be wrong.
Cade, the archery guy, wrong.
Dude, I talk about so many bows. I'm pretty sure it's number 2. A 30-inch. Anyway, 30-inch draw length. There's a train coming by, so if y'all hear that, we apologize. Anyway, it is 84 pounds. Yeah, 84 pounds, which 100%, I've gotten so many comments about this, guys. It is definitely overkill for this area.
You think?
Yeah.
Good God.
An 84-pound bow is overkill for this area.
I mean, I've seen people in this, well, not necessarily this area, but hunting smaller deer like we hunt, getting complete pass-throughs with 40-pound recurves. So,
yeah,
I mean, I'd say 84 pounds is a slight overkill.
But it is one of those things that I wanted to do. I've heard so many people talking about their 80-pound bow that I said, you know what? I can draw it back. I'm going to get one. And we're going to let it roll from here. So it is really cool because I do a lot of videos on my personal YouTube channel. It's 80-pound bow versus. So you can kind of pick up what's going on or with, I mean, actually how awesome this 80-pound bow is.
Also, that train's blowing its horn a lot more than most trains that come through here.
Yeah, but my 84-pound bow, 30-inch draw length, I am shooting 300 spine Black Eagle deep impacts that end up weighing, with a lighted knock, 503 grains.
That's a heavy arrow.
Yeah, that is a very heavy arrow. And what's even cooler about that very heavy arrow, that it is moving 298 feet per second, 2-300, depending on what time of day you shoot it through the chronograph. So you're looking at 300 feet per second is 200 miles an hour.
I mean, that's a very fast, heavy arrow. What's your, I can punch it up real quick. Have you looked at your kinetic energy?
It should be 92 foot-pounds, roughly. 92, that's what I believe it adds up to be.
I'm going to pull up the real tree. This is a really good calculator that I always go to. It's if you just can Google kinetic energy calculator bow or archery or something like that, it's probably going to be the first thing that comes up. It's real tree, and you just type in your arrow weight and your speed, and it'll come up. So it's 500 grain arrow at, we'll be conservative, 298. Generate.
It's never registered under 298.
Yeah, 98 and a half foot pounds of kinetic energy.
All right, so I lowballed it.
And it says your setup is suitable for, and the little picture beside it is a moose. So I'd imagine you can kill, I think it might be adequate for our 80-pound does around here.
Just a touch. I could literally blow through both front shoulders with that bow.
Especially if you have if you were running a fixed blade broadhead. Hey. I mean, that wouldn't be a problem.
Son, there's no need to shoot fixed blades when you got Swackers on the end. I can tell you by we're not sponsored by Swackers, but they're pretty awesome broadheads. There's a lot of really good broadheads out there, but as of today, we are shooting Swackers, and that's what I've shot for the past 5 or 6 years, and I freaking love them, guys.
Yeah, I'm shooting Swackers this year. And I'm actually, aren't you trying them too, the new Levi Morgan ones?
Yeah, the Levi Morgan, they're ribbed ferrule. They got a locking device to where you can lock them and use the same broadhead for practice as you do hunting without dulling the main blades on it.
I really like the fact that they have that, a bit of a curve to the blade.
Yeah.
The very, very minimal amount of knowledge I know about, like, physics and stuff, it seems like a curved blade would have more penetration, which you don't need that. you could shoot a backwards broadhead and probably kill a deer, but
I could probably kill whitetail with small game tips.
Yeah, you could probably get a pass through with one of them judo points or something. But either way, for me, the very first deer I ever shot was like a straight up gut shot on a doe with a Schwacker, the 1.75 inch 100 grain.
That's very surprising.
And I was shooting about 45 pounds, and she ran 75 yards. And then I didn't kill the deer with a bow for a couple years. And then I swapped to, I tried like four different types of fixed blades. I never could get them to fly right. I never put the time in to really tune it. So this year I'm like, well, I'm still not probably not going to put the time in to tune it properly. So I'm just going to switch back to Schwacker.
Hey, they fly like field tips.
They really do. Like, I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of broadheads that do it, but it's hard to beat a Schwacker. Because you get, the main thing I really like about them is you get a fresh blade to the vitals. Yeah. That blade does not have to go through any hair, any bone, nothing. It's a fresh, clean blade. If you put it in the right spot through, it's 2-inch cut, inch and 3/4 cut, whatever Schwacker you get, maybe even 1.5 inches.
Yeah, they make 1.5 inch 2-blade. They make 1.5 inch 3-blade. They have the 1.75 inch 2-blade, 2-inch 2-blade. The Levi Morgan is a 2-inch 2-blade.
Which isn't the regular 2-inch 2-blade like 125 grains, 125 grains?
They make them in 100 and 125.
They do?
Yeah. Okay. And then they have a turkey broadhead, which is a 2-blade 3-inch.
You should probably shoot that this year.
I would. I thought about it, but I don't know about the integrity of them hitting such a big animal that fast on it. I would need to do a lot of testing. If you go to my YouTube channel, there's quite a few videos showing off the durability of these broadheads.
They're pretty great.
I literally shot my 80-pound bow with a Schwacker broadhead on it into a cinder block, and it broke the cinder block. And the only thing that happened to the Schwacker is it broke off one of the wing blades, not the main blade, but the wing blade that's attached to the main blade.
By the way, guys, Schwacker really isn't paying us. And no. This is starting to sound like a Schwacker commercial.
I really wish they would, but not yet. So we're using their products. But going from there, talked about the bow, the arrows, anyway, I'm shooting an AAE Prophecy Rest, same one that Zach has on his bow. It's just like a QAD. It's probably beefed up a little bit more. It's a little bit more stout rest. It don't weigh much more, but it is a little bit beefier.
Doesn't have better adjustments too.
It's got a little bit lockdowns. I don't know if you necessarily call them better. It's just different features.
Yeah.
It's got more bearings in it than the QAD, which I would assume be a better thing. I really like mine. And my number one selling air rest is the QAD.
Which is an awesome rest.
It's awesome rest. I've only ever seen like two of them fail, and they were like 8 years old. So I think they got their good out of them. And they got probably their money's worth out of them.
Yeah, probably about time for a new one anyway.
Yeah. So that was like some of the first generation QADs. Yeah. But going from there, I use an Excel Pro Slide 5-pin sight. It's a carbon barred sight, and then that thing's built like a tank.
It's a very, very nice sight.
Yeah, it's quite honestly, it is one of the more expensive ones that Excel makes, but it's an awesome sight. And
I really like how the on like the scope housing, it has the rheostat adjustment.
Yeah, it has a rheostat adjustment to where you can adjust the the brightness of your pens without a light. You can make them brighter or darker just by adjusting the rheostat. Now, one thing I did to mine that's a little bit different, I have a 10,000th pens on it, so they're really small. So I took the rheostat adjustment off of it. So all of that fiber that would normally be up underneath the rheostat is not exposed, but open to collect light. Because there's very, very, very few times in my life to where I've had a 10,000th pen become too bright.
See, that's one thing with me, which I probably need something like that, because they're like, even if I have I guess it's like astigmatism or something, but I know I have like mild astigmatism, but like my pens, I run 10,000th pen as well, and like, even when I can't see the pen, I still can just barely make out the starburst effect when a pen's too bright. And I can't even tell where the pen is. Like, it's just, I don't know what it is. It's something about my eyes. But I have to really focus to see the actual pen.
Yeah. And so I took the rheostat off. That way it collected as much light as possible.
I would probably do the opposite and put some black tape over it or something.
Yeah. So it works great. Like, I don't have the best vision. I don't really have a problem with starbursting with my eyes. Because actually I'm very, very, very much so right eye dominant. But I have a slight astigmatism in my right eye, which causes my left eye to try to take over it. So I have to shoot with my left eye closed. So I very, very seldom have a problem with starbursting because I'm only using one eye. And that's where a lot of your starbursting comes from, is
I shoot with one
two
eye.
Eyes. So, it's just everybody's slightly different when it comes to their vision.
I mean, ever since I started shooting a lens, like for tournaments, like, when you're shooting a lens, it's very, for me at least, it's very difficult to shoot with two eyes open. I used to shoot with two eyes open, but when I started shooting a lens, it was pretty much impossible for me. And ever since then, I've just shot with one eye.
Yeah. But going from there, I am running the AAE Conquer bars, a front and back bar. I'm running eight inch bar off the front and a 6-inch bar off the back. I have one ounce on the front and 5 on the back. I try to keep it lighter than I normally do. This is, as far as the overall mass weight of the bow, it's the lightest bow I've shot in years.
Yeah, you usually shoot like 30 ounces off the back and about 14 up front.
That's on my tournament bows. Usually hunting.
If your hunting bow feels like it sometimes.
Yeah, usually hunting bows, I run probably 5 off the front and then like 10 off the back. But we were supposed to go elk hunting this year, so I made a point to try to lighten it up as much as possible. And then life happened and we weren't able to go on our elk hunt, and I really like the way the bow shoots, so I'm not going to touch it when it comes to that.
Also, the Missouri hunt, we're probably going to be walking pretty far, so that weight will still, the lightweightness will still be a plus.
Yeah, any hunter that listens to this and knows that 3 ounces in your hand while you're walking a long distance makes a heck of a difference.
It sure does.
That's the reason carbon bows do so well, because, I mean, even though they're only like 0.3, I guess, maybe 3 ounces lighter, that helps a lot whenever you're walking a long way. But
one thing I might try this year, which is gear, is one of those bow slings, because I'm gonna do a lot more public land hunting this year than I usually do, and also walking pretty far on my hunting club as well, on my lease. But I'm gonna try one of those bow slings, because I had one a while back, and it wasn't a very fancy one, and I didn't really like it, but I kind of want to try it again.
Let me ask you something. What happens if you have that bow sling on and you walk up to, and you see a deer 30 yards away from you that you would shoot?
Well, the bow sling I'm looking at, it's like one of the neoprene ones that you can just slide it off real quick. It's nothing. It's not like the first one I had, you had to like unbuckle it.
Yeah.
And then have it hanging down, and I didn't like that. But this one, the one that I'm looking at now, is it protects the strings from like rain and stuff if I happen to be hunting in the rain, which rarely happens anyway, but it's a lot easier to get off. And a lot of like Western hunters use them too.
I got you. What else is there to talk about my bow? Oh, and I'm not 100% sure if I'm using these yet, but I just got some, and I'm liking them so far. As I just got the Glory Knox, the lighted Knox. I like them. They actually fit into my deep impacts without having to put a outer bushing on it, and they're pretty legit as far as the toughness of. Like, there's not naming names, but there's some lighted knock companies out there that you can put, when you come to a knock that's that small, you can literally break them off with your thumb, and I wasn't willing to risk that while shooting an 80-pound bow, so I had to find a more durable knock, and so far the Glory Knock seemed to be pretty durable.
I haven't looked into the Glory Knox as much, but I know Fire Knock, and I think the company that I was looking at was like Knockout or something like that, but they have like an aluminum bushing.
Yeah,
and that's obviously a lot more durable than just plastic. What are the Glory Knox made of? Like, as far as like the bushing that goes in the arrow,
it's just a knock. And what's cool about them is like. Just for emphasis on comparing, if you were to take a nocturnal, the nocturnals have their battery is like inside the throat of the knock,
yeah,
that goes into the arrow, and so you have very little room for plastic to beef it up, yeah, and the Glory Knock is like a pretty much a full throated knock. That has, and the battery kind of sits at the very end of it.
Okay.
So you have more plastic on it. Okay. It's just a lot stiffer.
That makes sense.
The it's still in the throat of the knock, but it's like down at the bottom of the part of the knock that goes inside the arrow.
One thing I forgot to mention as far as my setup this year, I'm shooting the deep impacts now, and being that I'm shooting a fairly heavy arrow so fast, I mean, that's not a super heavy arrow, but it's heavier than the average hunter's arrow, I'd say. It's like a 40-something grain outsert at the tip, isn't that right?
46.
46?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's heavy FOC, they fly really good, and they're fairly heavy, still shooting pretty fast, but I am going to be shooting the... what is it? The carnivores, isn't that right?
Yeah, the carnivores. They're
they're
a slightly bigger arrow, but they're lighter. Even though you can equal, like your 350 carnivores are going to end up weighing a little bit less than your 400 deep impacts.
Yeah, the 350s are 7.5 grains per inch.
Yeah,
and I'm pretty sure the deep impacts are over 8 with a 47. Grain tip.
I know my
46 grain tip.
I know my 300 spine deep impacts are 11 grains per inch.
Yeah, so mine.
That's heavier than a FMJ.
Yeah.
Or heavy as an FMJ. I mean, they're thick, like with 3Cs.
Yeah.
As far as walled. But.
I just want to break 300. And I know I can do that with those carnivores.
Yeah, that's not going to be a problem.
Honestly, I never thought that was possible at my draw length. But, you know, the only thing that's impossible is impossibility, I guess.
Who defines that line?
That was on a Phineas and Ferb episode.
Ah. I thought you were going to throw out something like, you know.
Mark Twain. No, it was on a Phineas. I don't know who originally said that quote, but I remember I was like, I don't know, 10, 12 years old, something like that, and I heard that on a Phineas and Ferb episode, and that's pretty much the only thing that's ever stuck from a cartoon.
Other than they used to ride rocks for miles.
I mean, SpongeBob is a different level.
Of stupidity?
of genius.
All right, so let's stop talking about cartoons. All right, so real quick before we continue this, I want to give a quick shout out to Kevin Ace. Kevin Ace just subscribed to our YouTube channel as we were filming this like 5 minutes ago. I just didn't want to interrupt.
Heck yeah.
So, Kevin, thank you. I'm sure, I believe your name is Kevin. Your E is a backwards three, so that's what we're going to just call you. Kevin Ace, thank you. Three even. So, if you do just so happen to subscribe to our YouTube channel, while we are doing either a video or a podcast, we are going to give you a shout out.
Unless we're hunting.
Yeah.
Because then we, Cade might be different, but I do not have service.
I don't, most of the time. So, we've talked about pretty much our bow setups. So, let's kind of switch a little bit. Let's talk about climber, tree stand, saddle, whatever you put your butt into whenever you are in a tree. Zach, let's...
why don't you start off? Because you've done a lot to your climber over the past few years.
Okay, I've hunted out of my Summit Goliath, I think, right at about 4.5 or 5 years. 4 to 6 years. Let's just give it a safe number. I used to hunt out of an old man climber, and
bad decision. I would say. I mean, well, the older old man's, like
the new ones are pretty nice.
Yeah, I haven't messed around with the new ones, but I just know from other people talking, the old ones are pretty much a death trap.
Yeah. So what? Let's put it this way.
Unless you want to sponsor the show, then they're the greatest thing ever.
So one thing that I did, like the old man that I used to climb in, it was, so the way it worked, you climb facing the tree, obviously. Then whenever you got up, if you wanted to sit with your back facing the tree, you had to drop the climber, the top part of the climber, low, step over the net seating, and then slide the net seating back to where you could sit on it and lean against the tree. And I'm a big boy.
Yeah.
I didn't want to have to. So when I hunted out of it, I didn't want to lean against the rail of the dang shooting rail of it. So, and I really didn't want to lower it down to step over. Because I was, when I hunted out of it, I was, you know, 15, 16 years old when I first started climbing, and I absolutely couldn't stand it. So I bought a Goliath. It's the same one that I hunt with today after a couple years of not hating climbing because I didn't like how that stand worked. And let me tell you one thing. It is very, very rarely that you see me hunting without me being in that Summit Goliath. I love it. The only time I don't hunt in it is if I just so happen to be going to a place that has a stand right where I'm wanting to be, or if it's raining and I sit in a shooting house or blind. But so my Summit, I did a lot of small customizations to it. And we do have a full video of me showing kind of what I did to it, if you want to see visually what I did to it, on our YouTube channel. But I took every one of the stock pads off of it, and I completely wrapped all of the upper part from where you would sit when you're climbing to the rails running up to like you place your arms on when you're climbing, or if you grab when you're climbing, where you place your arms on when you're sitting, and wrapped it in paracord. I served it on kind of like you would serve a string on a bow. And I love it that way. Yes, that paracord will eventually rot out, but I've used the same paracord for about 3 years now, and I think it's got at least one more year left in the paracord. But it takes about 500 feet of paracord to do that, so if you're interested in doing that, buy about 500 feet, and then if you have any left, you can use it as a pull-up rope. And then I have a... As far as holding my bow, I have my the Summit bow holder on it, and you put it on a tree, hook it up, and then you can set the angle which you want. And obviously I have it off my, when I'm sitting in the stance, off my left hand side, so I can grab it with my left hand.
Those things are pretty nice, honestly. Like, I have one on my climber right now, and that's, it's a whole lot better than one of those, like, tree hooks.
Yeah, it's just a lot easier. Plus, you don't have to get so hot and sweaty trying to screw that thing into the tree if on a tree hook.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a pain in the butt.
Especially. Also, those are illegal on public land in Alabama and in most places, I'm pretty sure.
I would imagine so. It's legal on private land, and it just may be a just-so-happened situation, but it's, the odds are kind of crazy. I accidentally left one of those in my club on, you know, private land. I left one of those hangers in my tree because I planned on climbing that tree again, just never did. And I left it in there, and like you do, I forgot about it. And I went back to that plot about 3 months later. It's about how long it went before I went back to that plot. And while I was walking through it, I said, oh, I forgot my hanger. Before I got to it, I was walking down to it and said, oh, I forgot my hanger in that tree. I might have to climb up and get it out. I didn't have to climb up and get it out. That tree got struck by lightning and fell.
Huh.
Yeah. I have no idea if it had anything to do with there being a metal rod. So, yeah, it was one of the big easy hangers.
That's actually kind of crazy.
Yeah, it wasn't far, but so I didn't have to get it out. I actually walked over to where the tree fell down, and it was still fine. The tree landed on the opposite side, and I unscrewed it, and then I had my hanger. It had just a bunch of sap left on it, but so I had to clean it, but I don't even know where it's at anymore. I don't use them, and it works really good. If you don't necessarily go with the Summit one, what's his name? Third hand. He makes
third
a really
arrow?
Good no, third
fourth
hand.
Arrow. Third hand.
Third hand.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're talking about now.
Yeah, not fourth arrow.
Yeah, fourth arrow is just camera arms. I'm
yeah,
sure.
But it's third hand archery accessories or bow hunting accessories or something. Anyway, he makes one that's similar to the Summit that's a little bit beefier. And it works out really well. My dad's got one of those on his Goliath.
Okay.
He don't climb as much as he used to, but he's got one on his.
Mine's I think it's HME or something like that. HHE. It was like $11.
One of those Chinese knockoff versions of it.
Pretty much, but it works.
By American made.
It might slide every now and then, but it works.
I'm pretty sure Summit's still made in Alabama, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But that's generally my setup. You know, obviously on the Summits, you got to do monthly or every couple years or so, you need to change out the cables in them. I changed mine out at the end of last year, so I got brand new cables going into this year on it.
Nice.
I need to change out my seat. Big guy like me sitting in that thing for 4 years kind of brings its toll, but it's still working as of right now, so I might change it out mid-season or something like that.
Yeah.
But tell us about your craziness that you have going on in your head right now between your climbers and this new thing.
Okay. So last year, and I think I didn't buy that climber last year from you.
Yeah. The Summit Century.
We
have one left at Alabama Archery Academy. If anybody's interested in it, I'll give you a heck of a deal on it.
Yeah, it's been there for a while, but that's besides the point.
We don't necessarily sell a lot of tree stand stuff.
But anyway, I've got the Summit Century. It's a pretty nice stand. I mean, it's super comfortable. I can shoot sitting down, which cost me a deer last year. But it's a nice climber. I haven't really done anything to it except put my bow hanger on it. But I also did one thing that was like a life changer for carrying in, like, for public land. especially like when you got to walk a long distance. Again, sorry about the train, but but I put a Molly frame, military style frame and straps onto my climber, and it really, like, I'm pretty sure I've talked about it before, but either way, it takes a lot of the weight off of your back and really distributes it a lot better. And it just feels a whole lot better walking in. And I clip my backpack to it and everything with all my gear.
Yeah, and I'm looking at doing that, and I just looked it up. Oh, you can buy those off of Amazon with the Molly back plate and the straps. Frame. Yeah, back frame, plate, whatever. And the straps for around $89.
I can't remember what I paid, but I'm pretty sure I found some sort of like dark web website or something like that. It was like one of those websites where you go on it and it's like, this is either going to be a really good deal or they're going to steal my credit card information. And it was like $70. It was like $60 or $70 for all of it.
And if you happen to live near a military surplus store, they may have them.
They probably do. And they'll probably have also like the Alice straps. And I think there's another one. I don't remember the name of it. Like Haley or something. It's all women's names, but it's acronyms. I don't understand it. Maybe it's because they're lonely if you're in the military. I don't know. But either way, I put one of those frames and straps on my climber, and it's awesome. But it's still 23 pounds on your back of just a climber.
Low numbers. You got to bump those numbers up.
Well, the Sentry is 23 pounds. The Goliath is like 48.
No, that's right. I think the Sentry and the Goliath use the same exact frame.
Yeah.
I think the Goliath comes in at around at 21 pound, 22. What makes the Sentry a little bit heavier is the seat that's made into it, pretty much.
Yeah, it's got like an aluminum frame seat that flips up, and it's kind of like Millennium style.
Yeah, it's a Millennium style seat without a backrest.
Yeah. But what I'm going to do this year, I've put in my order. It's going to take a little while to get here. Hopefully it'll be here by season. But I ordered a Mantis saddle, and I am actually super pumped about it.
That's from Tethered, right?
Tethered, yeah. it's actually a funny story. I ordered, there's two main companies I know about that make like legit tree saddles, and I was having issues with the Tethered site. They were having technical difficulties on their site or something, and it just wouldn't let me put anything in my cart.
That day?
Just one day. It was weird. And I had just got paid, and I was like, I need to order it now or else I'm going to spend all my money. And I was kind of freaking out because it's like a 6 to 8 week back order on them. And so I was like, well, I'm just going to go on this other website, Arrow Hunter, and buy one of theirs. And I ordered one, and then the next day, Tethered was back up and running. And Arrow Hunter was like a 10-week back order. And I contemplated it for a little while, and I was like, well, I want to go with the Mantis from Tethered. And I ended up canceling my order and reordering the Mantis.
But just for full disclosure, it wasn't because of the brand. That's not the reason you canceled. You canceled it because you wanted this particular one more.
Well, the main reason, honestly, was because I just wanted it. I'm hoping to get the 6 week instead of the 8 week return or back order, whatever it is. Hopefully I'll get my saddle before season. And I'm really pumped about it. As far as I know, I'm the only person in the world who has ever looked at a saddle and said, that's exactly what I need. Because everybody else that has ever mentioned a saddle has been like, everybody's like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard of. You're going to kill yourself, all this stuff. But, I mean, from what I've heard, it's the safest thing ever. It's super lightweight. And I'm pretty pumped about it. And I've been looking at a few different options as far as getting up the tree. And one of the things that is really catching my eye is called the, it's from Bullman Outdoors, I believe. It's called the Silent Approach Steps, and they're these really lightweight polymer steps you just strap to a tree, and I think the kit comes with like 10 of them, and they have like a really, they come with like a really nice like fanny pack looking thing. Well, I won't say, I don't know if it's really nice or not because I've never messed with them, but it's convenient at the very least. And it's like a fanny pack, and it holds, it's two fanny packs that hold 5 each, and it, the whole setup is like under 4 pounds, or right at 4 pounds, something like that. And it'll get you like anywhere from 15 to 17 feet up a tree, something like that. So I'm pretty pumped about going super lightweight and super mobile this year. And I'm probably also going to run some sort of strap hanger that like I can strap around a tree and has the hooks and everything, where I can hang my stuff up on the tree.
Yeah, tell the truth, you got that, you wanted to get that that saddle just because you have a full man crush on Parker McDonald.
I mean, I listen to all his podcasts, but I wouldn't call it a man crush yet. Yeah. I've never met the guy, okay?
Yeah, just big fans.
But but either way,
his podcasts are really good, by the way. I'm sure if you've listened to this, if you're listening to us, I'm sure you've listened to Parker McDonald's Southern Ground. His podcasts are awesome.
They're really geared for the Southern hunter, which is, like, you'd rarely find anything close to that.
Yeah, I mean, and we want to be the even more Southern hunter podcast.
But actually, the first time I ever heard of a saddle, like everybody else, I feel like everybody else heard of the saddle hunting stuff from like maybe Mark Kenyon with the Wired to Hunt podcast or something, which that's a really good podcast, but he's definitely more of a northern Midwestern guy, something like that.
Yeah, I forgot where he's from. Where?
Michigan,
yeah. That's
And I listen to the Meat Eater podcast, which is mainly like Western stuff and all that, so there's really not much for the Southern hunter. And yeah, but either way.
And I mean, Working Class Bow Hunter is a very, very fun podcast to listen to.
Yeah,
yeah.
But either way, the where I heard about a saddle, I was literally looking up on Google trying to find a lighter stand. Like, this was right before season last year. I was looking on Google. I was looking up different lock-ons and different climbers and all sorts of stuff, and I just never could find what I really wanted, because I would find like these 9-pound lock-ons, but the only climbing sticks I could find would add up to another 9 pounds, and with all my camera gear, you're still over 20 pounds. So I was like, well, I need something, I want to find something lighter than that. And I stumbled across saddle stuff, and this year I finally pulled the plug and ordered one. So, and as far as I know, from listening to different podcasts and watching YouTube videos and all sorts of stuff, I am the only person who has ever looked at a saddle and said, I need that, the first time.
Yeah, I'm very skeptical about it.
As most people are.
Yeah.
Just wait till I get mine in and get you up in it, which mine's probably not going to fit you.
Yeah, because you wear baby sizes and I wear man sizes.
I wouldn't say that. The saddle, I think it goes out to like a 34-inch waist, something like that. I think that's the max on the medium.
That's not going to fit me.
Yeah. Maybe we can get you in one day, and you'll come to the light. Which, I've never used a saddle. It may be the worst thing I've ever tried, but from where everything I've heard says, it's awesome.
Yeah, full disclaimer, he doesn't really know yet.
I really don't. I've never seen a saddle in person, so... But I'm pretty pumped about, you know, packing in, you know, 4 pounds, 5 pounds max of full climbing stuff.
Yeah. So we're running a little bit long. So that's pretty much what we carry in far as our stands, stuff like that. You know, we make adjustments on the fly if needed be, but that's our bare roots base, what we're taking far as our stand. Going from that, we're going to talk a little bit about our camera equipment for our self filming for our YouTube channel, and we're going to like our camera arm and just overall what all we take in. Zach, you're more of that camera guy, so you're gonna go first on this one.
Yeah, so I'm running, as far as like camera arm, I'm running one of the cheaper, it's like the basic Muddy arm. And I mean, it's nothing special, but it works. And this year I'm actually probably gonna order a fluid head so I can get a better like moving shots and stuff like that. But my camera is, well, I can't even remember what the name of my camera is.
It's a Sony.
It's a Sony, I know that.
It's 4K, and you can buy it off Amazon for around $780, something like that.
Yeah, it's around $700-$800. It's a pretty nice camera, and it, you know, it's got an internal gimbal, which is pretty nice. It makes shots a lot more stable, and I've got a fairly cheap mic on it. It sounds better than just the camera, but I am running an external mic on mine.
Yeah, and I will be this year. I didn't last year. My camera picks up audio pretty well.
It does all right.
By itself. So how much does your full-on camera, your camera stuff weigh, roughly?
My camera is probably around 2-3 pounds. 2 pounds probably with the mic and all that. Maybe 3, something like that. And my camera arm, I'm pretty sure I read on Muddy website the other day, it's like 4 pounds. Yeah. And the fluid head's not going to add much to that. And I also have a Badlands. I think it's called the Eastern Day Pack, something along those lines.
Yeah, I think so. Somewhere.
Eastern Day.
Yeah. I think it's something like that.
It's one
of their cheapest bags on there.
It's like a 1200 cubic inch. It's nothing crazy. It's just barely big enough to hold all my stuff.
Yeah.
And all I really carry in is my camera and my camera arm.
And his crackers and
I don't really carry in snacks much.
16 bottles of water.
Early bow season, I might carry a bottle of water in, but I really don't carry many snacks in.
Yeah. So go from that. My camera setup is I have a Canon XA30 that is temporary. That's what I'm plan on using. I accidentally temporarily, I had a setback. It fell out of my truck and it broke the display screen. Anyway, wait for the new screen to come in. But that's the camera I used all last year, and I hope I get to use it this year.
Hopefully.
Yeah, so hopefully, y'all keep y'all's finger crossed. Help me out. Do a little prayer. Hope that the replacement screen that I ordered works. Alright, so going from there, I have the more advanced Muddy arm, which is a little bit bigger. It mounts to the tree by a ratchet strap. It works really well. I'm actually looking into potentially getting one of the fourth arrow camera mounts. I really like the fact that they're lighter and smaller.
Yeah, I really want one, but now is probably not the time.
Yeah, I really want one. So if I can convince Zach to buy my Muddy, I might get...
Why don't you just give it to me?
Nah, that ain't how this works.
Whatever.
But I really like it. It's just a little bit big, and I use a Super Day.
I think that camera arm is like around 6 pounds.
Yeah.
The higher end one.
Yeah, it's not heavy. It's just a little bit bulky the frame mount that goes to the tree. And I'm using the Super Day pack, so I can fit my entire camera arm into the big pouch of my Super Day, and then the small pouch of the Super Day I can fit my camera into. And then early season, I typically throw a bottle of water in there to pretty much drink as soon as I get up into the tree, because it's like 85 degrees on a cool day whenever we climb up for early bow season.
Yeah, especially in the afternoon. You walk in, you're sweating.
Yeah. Scent control is definitely the wind by the most part. And then we use some cover scents and stuff like that with Native. And then we spray as well. But got the Super Day pack. Really, really like that pack. I got that pack and mainly was the idea behind it was to eventually for taking for elk hunts and stuff like that. But it worked out so good. It fit my camera equipment so well that I decided to use it around here. And now by the time I get to use it elk hunting, I'll probably have to get another one because I put a lot of miles on this pack.
Oh, yeah.
But I really like the pack. And, yeah, so my muddy camera arm, the Canon XA30. I'm also going to implement my GoPro this year, mainly for a secondary shot. I have the GoPro Hero 7, the black version. And that's the one I use for most of my vlogging stuff. And I use it for fishing videos. So I'm going to try to use it as just a secondary angle point to whether I hadn't decided if I wanted to video me or video another point of the deer or what else, but I hadn't decided yet. But I really like that thing videos like crazy good quality for the size of camera. Yeah, it is.
Such a small camera is pretty awesome.
I mean, it does have a 4K setting on it, but YouTube only goes to 1080p pretty much. So,
but if you were like, I have the older style. It's like it's the same body, but it's called the GoPro Hero.
It's like the same generation as the 5, I think.
Yeah, but it's like a budget camera. You can get them on Amazon for like I think they're like $120-$130, something like that. But it's a nice camera for the money, waterproof and all that. But with the thing about the 4K, like just in the instance that it's raining and you're not taking your XA30, but you also want to climb in a spot, you could put that 4K setting and put it on your head or something, and you can actually crop it down to 1080p, and it's like 2x zoom, which isn't much, but it's better than nothing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll really come into play, and I'll in my pack I'll throw in my mount that I could hook it up to my bow or something like that if, like I said, I'm not going to expose my expensive camcorder camera to rain. So if it's raining, I'll leave my camcorder in my bag and just use the GoPro pretty much. But make sure if you use a GoPro, you turn the beeps off. Because they're pretty loud.
Do what?
The beeps for the recorder.
Oh, yeah. You gotta turn that off if you're hunting with a GoPro.
They work good with those beeps for fishing. That way you know when you're recording and know when you're not. But
yeah, but you don't want the deer to also know when you're recording. Because they get a little camera shy when they hear, beep, beep, beep.
They might pose, though. They might. It's like, oh, it's my time to shine.
They'll pose, look up at you, and then about the time you start moving, they're gone.
I'm going to yell at them, let me make you famous. But is there anything else, Zach, that you kind of want to add? We kind of covered most of our basics of what we carry in, what we use. Oh, we didn't even talk about guns, which we don't use guns very often.
The only thing I want to say about guns is, I mean, last year I hunted like 2 or 3 times with my rifle, but one thing I carried in a decent bit was my 1911. And it's not your basic everyday friendly neighborhood 1911. This is a bad.
It's not your granddaddy's 1911.
No, it is it's a Taurus PT 1911, which isn't a great 1911. It's not the best, but I have converted it to a kind of Wildcat caliber 460 Roland.
The Mighty 460.
The Mighty 460 Roland.
If you look them up on their website.
Oh, yeah. I've got Wilson Combat Mags. They've seemed to work the best with a slightly different cartridge. It basically has the power of a 44 Magnum, and I know from experience that it can break both shoulders of a deer and have a complete pass through.
Yeah. Like
it's watch the video. It's a pretty epic video, honestly.
It's pretty cool. That 460 is a bad dude, and I want to build one or to change one to be a. I want to get a 1911 when they do it, just because it's pretty cool. Like, I have a 44 Magnum that you can watch me kill a doe with it last year, and I freaking love that gun.
It's a cowboy.
It is my favorite handgun that I own. That thing's accurate. I mean, one day we were shooting at the range. We filmed a video. It may have been the day where we did a video where we compared our 460 rolling versus 44 Magnum. And
I don't remember what day it was, but yeah.
We hit clay pigeons at 100 yards with it.
A couple shots, but we did it.
Yeah, I had to learn how to aim with it.
Yeah.
But it's pretty freaking accurate for a 6-inch barrel.
Oh, yeah.
Like, Zach, I don't hardly ever pick up a rifle. The only time you'll ever see me picking up a rifle to hunt is the last 10 to 15 days of January and the first 10 days of February to run the season. That's the only time I'll ever pick up a rifle, pretty much. And that is during peak rut of Alabama.
Of South Alabama, yeah.
Yeah, of South Alabama where we hunt. And
that's not knocking on, you know, rifle hunters. Like, I don't have any issue with anybody hunting with a rifle. Oh, it's a whole lot more effective than a bow.
Oh, it's a lot of fun. I mean shooting a rifle is fun and it's awesome. I support rifle hunting 110%. I just am that guy. I prefer to bow hunt.
I pretty much bow hunt till I see deer chasing.
Yeah, and then I may pick up my rifle. Now the first 10, you know, the bow season, the opening of bow season till rifle season, I'll carry a sidearm with me, but more a smaller sidearm just in case, which is completely legal on private land, I know, but I don't know about public land. But
last I heard, on public land, if you had your concealed carry permit, you could conceal carry on public land.
Yeah, pretty much. Bow season. If you have a concealed weapons permit, there's really nothing that they can say to you.
From what I've heard. Yeah. Anyway. I'm not 100% sure, but anyway.
But so as soon as rifle season comes in, I tote my 44 mag in with me because it's fun to shoot deer with a handgun. It's really awesome. Fun. Like if you've ever killed a deer with a bow, there is an adrenaline rush that rushes over you that is like no other feeling. And the closest thing I've ever came to that adrenaline rush was when I shot that doe with my handgun last year.
It's crazy. Like, bow hunting and pistol hunting are very similar. Bow shooting and pistol shooting are very similar because, like, if you have a rifle, if you know how to squeeze the trigger slow and put the crosshairs on a dot, I mean, you're going to hit the dot.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not a whole lot of process to that. But you have to practice with a pistol, you have to practice with a bow, you have to get your form and everything down, and it's a lot more of a challenge than you would expect to shoot a pistol accurately.
Yeah, and it's not like we're not even putting the sights that we use on our guns are the iron sights that come on them.
And I got lucky with my deer because, I mean, that was like a 13-yard shot because, I mean, I feel confident out to 25 on a target. But I mean, it's, I don't know.
Yeah, I killed my doe at 35 yards with my 44 Magnum. It's not a competition. I'm just.
I mean, you have a longer sight radius, yeah, as well, because, like, the 1911 is a 5-inch barrel, and it's like a just over 4-inch sight radius, and yours is a full over 6-inch sight inch radius.
And I mean, like I said, that gun's very accurate.
It is. It's just the nature of a revolver, but
that revolver's way more accurate than I could ever shoot it.
Oh yeah.
But handguns are fun. If you've never killed a deer with a handgun, I highly suggest you get a handgun to do it. Don't take your 9mm out there and do it. Have respect for the animal that you're going to shoot.
Which is crazy that Alabama, like the only cartridge restriction is that it can't be a rimfire.
It has to be a centerfire. Technically, you can go out there with a 380 ACP and go kill a deer with it. Legally.
But that's dumb.
That's very stupid.
That was not ethical at all.
No, you want to have what the law restricts and what's ethical are two different things.
Most of the time.
I wouldn't shoot a deer with a 9mm. I wouldn't shoot a deer with a 40.
I mean, I'm still iffy. Like, I have a 357 Magnum, and I know there's plenty of people that have killed deer with a 357 Magnum, but after seeing what that 460 can do, the 460 really surprised me, because everything I've heard about shooting a pistol at a deer has been, you know, when you have to be a really good tracker, because you're not going to get a pass through and all this stuff, but if you've got a powerful enough round, it's better than having a rifle just about, at close range at least.
Yeah, and we're not going to get on that 10mm debate, because that's a iffy, that in my mind, that's an iffy caliber.
I mean, I've seen, it's tough, it's all personal preference, I'd imagine, because I've seen 10mm drop a 300-pound pig at 80 yards. In its tracks, but I wouldn't have an issue with hunting with a 10mm, but I would, it's weird, because I would have an issue a little bit with hunting it with a 357.
Even though the 357 is pretty much side by side compatible with a 10mm.
Yeah, but I don't know, it's just seeing what the 10mm can do on videos and stuff.
Yeah, but I mean, there's been guys out there that killed them with
42s.
Well, 45 ACP.
There's been guys, I mean, I don't know if this is true or not, but I've heard this so many times that more deer in America have been shot with a 22 long rifle.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I've heard that my entire life.
I have too.
I've never talked to,
I've or never met a single soul,
one that is, that would admit that they've killed one with that. I mean, it's technically legal, but I've never heard anybody brag about shooting one.
I've heard of people shooting them with 17s and depredation permits, but I think that's legal. I don't know.
But Zach uses the 460 roll, and I use a 44 Magnum, which on paper are very, very, very similar rounds.
And on with our video where we tested them, they're very similar.
Yeah, so I would check that out. Now, obviously, if you have the money or the money to go get you one of those 500 Smith & Wessons.
Or at least, my dream handgun hunting pistol is a 460 Smith & Wesson Performance Center. I think the one that I want is called the Stealth Hunter. It's like a $1,200 pistol. I'm going to buy one day, because those things are freaking awesome.
Yeah, I want one of those 500 Smith & Wesson. So
you can have one.
Just because. But if Demolition Ranch doesn't like shooting it, I know I won't like shooting it.
Yeah, I'll stick with that 460 Smith & Wesson 454 Casull I ever get that kind of coin.
Yeah, but I don't know about the – I've thought about putting like a red dot or something on mine, but – I kind of like the challenge of being able to throw them that, or be able to try to kill them with those iron sights. I mean, my effective range, I feel more confident shooting a deer at 50 yards with my bow than I do with that pistol at 50 yards.
Yeah.
But I know how to do it, and yeah, I know how to kill it. Like, when I killed, like, I had someone comment on my video of me shooting that
That kind of made me mad.
It upset me a little bit, too. It's actually one of the very few comments we've ever got that, like, bothered me. And that, if you watch the video, that deer was facing toward me.
It was kind of quartered toward you.
Yeah, it was quartering toward me, not completely facing dead to me. But I shot that deer through the front right side shoulder as it was facing toward me, its right side shoulder. That bullet expanded, broke the shoulder in half. Shot and hit in both lungs.
Probably at least nicked the heart or the hydrostatic shock, busted the heart or something.
Yeah. Ran all the way through the length of his body and didn't get an exit wound. It was stuck in between the helm and the hide. And the guy told me it was a horrible shot. Like, but I hit exactly where I was aiming.
I mean, as far as, like, penetration, that's almost as far as long of a shot as you're going to get as far as from the entrance wound to the exit wound on a deer around here.
So, from the front shoulder of a normal-sized doe, that doe I shot was probably 110 pounds.
Yeah.
That's, what, 3.5 feet?
I would say it was at least, 3 feet.
Yeah,
2.5, 3 feet.
Roughly 3 feet of penetration that round had into that deer.
And, I mean, if you want to talk about as far as vitals, it broke the shoulder, which is almost a guarantee that you got at least most of one lung. You hit the other lung, probably caused some damage to the heart, definitely passed through the liver, definitely passed through the guts.
Yeah, I cleaned that deer. I can fully tell you that it busted both lungs. I didn't look at the heart, but it went through both lungs.
I mean, that was probably, as far as like cleaning the deer, it wasn't the best thing. But as far as lethality of the shot, it was probably the most lethal shot you could get.
The only more lethal shot you could possibly do if you put it straight through the dome. And I do not like shooting. I'm fully against shooting animals in the head.
Yeah. Unless it's a squirrel with a 17 or something.
I'm talking about deer. I'm fully against shooting any type of game animal, like a large game animal, like a deer or anything in the head.
It's just a lot
maybe
of
a different story. But
with a deer, like as small as their head is, you think, oh, I can just hit it right there and kill it. But there's a lot of room for error. And, I mean, you're more likely going to wound that animal for the rest of its life and cause it to have a slow and painful death than kill it right there.
Yeah, shoot.
And that's the thing. If it doesn't fall dead right there and you shoot it in the head, it's probably going to live a miserable next month.
Yeah,
month and a half.
Double lung them. Let them run that 30 to 80 yards. Go get them. Take them home. Yeah, that deer I shot only ran about 75 yards. It didn't bleed a whole lot because it didn't get that exit wound. But it took about 35 minutes of looking to find that deer. I went back, watched the video, watched exactly where it walked out, watched it tail off through the woods. After we went back, we looked around for blood for a little bit, went back, looked at the video. My dad walked pretty much straight to it.
Which is another thing, like, we are blessed to be videoing because, like, it's just crazy just how much information you get from watching the actual shot that you make on an animal.
Yeah, guys, we highly, highly recommend if you are a hunter to video your hunts. You don't have to post them. You don't have to show anybody. But I can't tell you how much I've learned about hunting just by videoing and watching me hunt.
Yeah.
My mistakes, what I did wrong, what I can do better. It just made me so much better as a hunter. When I missed Mohican, I went back and watched that footage a thousand times.
We watched it at least 30 times that night at the hunting camp.
Yeah, making me sick, wanting to go.
We blew it up on the big screen on the TV and everything.
Yeah, wanted to make me go puke.
Oh yeah. And I mean, I felt sick after you missed that deer.
I learned, but what I did is I went back. I was able to reevaluate what I did wrong. I was shooting a thumb button at that time. I punched the trigger too hard. I just made a bad shot under nerves. So I went back to my hinge, figured out, I went and killed a doe, gained back some confidence, didn't end up getting that kill on camera. Had the whole hunt, but didn't get the kill on camera, so I never used it because it was a doe. And it was just awesome to go back and learn from my mistake that I made that day.
Yeah.
And readjust and go back and it makes you a better hunter being able to go back and watch your own mistakes.
Definitely. And one thing I noticed, as going back to like fixed blade versus, well, not really fixed blade versus expandables, but one of my experiences with fixed blades, which was 100% my fault, nothing to do with the broadhead or the bow or the arrow or anything, but I was shooting a really large cut fixed blade, four blade, and it was like 1 3/16, and I had low profile vanes, and I wasn't shooting super fast, and I hit it. We never used the video, but I had a video of where I shot a doe in straight up no man's land. And some people think that's a myth. Let me tell you, it's definitely not.
No man's land is a very real thing on deer.
Definitely.
With bow hunting.
Yes. And I hit this deer. It was like barely clipped like the top of the shoulder blade and somehow squeezed below the spine and above the lungs. Like the only blood we found was just a little bit of muscle blood. There was no bubbles or anything in it. Nothing. It was definitely not lethal, because I'm pretty sure somebody else on my club saw that deer later in the year. But either way, I got to watch in slow motion the arrow flying towards the deer, going nowhere near where I had aimed. It was like a 30-yard shot, nothing crazy. And you could see the arrow wobbling like crazy in the air and just twisting.
And you were in your climber, but you were in pretty thick stuff. There is a chance that that arrow could have nicked a limb or something.
I mean, I was above the thick stuff. What I believe it was just the fact that I was shooting three low profile vanes with a very large diameter four blade fixed blade. Like the back end of the arrow, the knock side of the arrow, was going a lot faster than the front of the arrow, and it just really whacked things up. And that was just me not putting in the effort to really fine-tune my equipment.
Yeah, shame on you.
Yeah, but I mean, that doe lived.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. I'm just messing with you. But
and I never would have known. I'd probably still be shooting those broadheads. Well, I probably wouldn't still be shooting those broadheads, but I never would have known that effect if I wasn't filming.
Yeah, knowledge is key.
Yeah.
Knowledge on what you do, what you can do better, very, very important. But that's part of listening to podcasts and watching YouTube videos and all that. You try to learn from our mistakes. We're going to tell you our mistakes.
Yeah.
We're not perfect. We don't claim to be. Really, I mean, it's impossible to be perfect. It's all about pursuing and trying to be. So yeah. we really hope that y'all learn from our mistakes, because we're not going to be shy about talking about them. I mean, we're both young guys. We've made plenty of mistakes, and we've done some things necessarily what you would consider right. Far as hunting, we live this stuff. Like, yes, we have jobs and stuff that we do, but we live for hunting. Like that, like we live to go hunting. It's like one of the most it's number three. You got the good Lord. You got your family and friends. That count as one. So the good Lord, family and friends, then hunting. That's my life. Pretty much.
Sometimes every now and then hunting comes second.
Maybe. But this is going to be one of our longer podcasts. that we've had, or the longest podcast we had so far. I hope y'all really enjoyed the listen to us. I hope y'all learned something. You got something to
say. Maybe you enjoyed it.
Give us a rating on there. 5 stars only, please. 5 stars only. We'll take a four.
No, we won't.
No, we won't. I'm just kidding.
Even if you hated this podcast and you've made it through this far, give us a 5-star review just for as a way of patting yourself on the back for making it all the way through the podcast.
Yeah, congratulations. You listened to us talk for an hour. But we really appreciate you guys and gals out there listening to us. I mean,
all three of them.
Yeah, all three of them. Nah. But yes, we really appreciate it. We're about to get off this thing and
possibly tune in next week for a squirrel hunting episode, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. We'll see as the season comes in. We may, if I can get out there and do something. The problem is I don't want to go squirrel hunting on my lease.
I'll check public land.
Yeah, check the public land season and stuff.
I think as far as like national forest, if it's open permit like a national forest, I think it's basically the same rules as
double
private.
Check.
But yeah, I'll triple double check.
But anyway, guys, I really appreciate y'all listening to this. Again, thank you to our sponsors, Alabama Archery Academy, Black Eagle Arrows, Threads Custom Bowstrings, and Native Sense. If you hadn't already, please check them out. We really appreciate y'all listening to this. Always remember to keep God first in your life. Get out and enjoy the wildlife that He has created for us. We have domain over these creatures, so that He give us the right to do so. So we appreciate it. Go say your nightly prayers or morning prayers. And always remember to live life 25 high.